Willow Valley Communities recognizes the need for a national conversation about the Vietnam War and is proud to support the efforts to preserve the memories of those who lived through it. More information is available at willowvalleycommunities.org. The law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein and Lehr, who are proud to partner with WITF in preserving our history to enable future generations to explore the past, understand the present, and create the future. Saul Ewing is online at saul.com.
Funding for Smart Talk is provided by Capital Blue Cross, providing healthcare coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. Serving the community for over 75 years, Capital Blue Cross is behind you for whatever lies ahead. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, live fearless. Smart Talk is also supported by Pinnacle Health, committed to research that improves health, reduces recovery times, and brings new treatments and therapies to our area before they are available elsewhere. More information is at pinnaclehealth.org.
Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. In the nearly 50 years since the end of Americans' involvement in Vietnam, Americans have struggled to rationalize the causes and meanings of the 20-year war and incursion. The war shaped the landscape of American culture for an entire decade, inspiring music, art, and discourse that addressed its impact on both soldiers and civilians. It's forced us to redefine the roles of engagement and the way in which we treat combat veterans upon their return. Award-winning documentarians Ken Burns and Lynn Novick chronicle the war in the 18-hour film The Vietnam War. It will premiere on WITF-TV and PBS starting this Sunday at 8 p.m. Joining us to discuss the film are the series co-director Lynn Novick and executive producer Sarah Botstein. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. Lynn Novick, very happy to have you on the program today. This is a project that's been described as you and Ken Burns' most ambitious. It took 10 years to put this together. Why 10 years? I mean, when you hear that, I mean, that is an awful lot of time to devote to a topic. But why did it take so long?
Well, it's an incredible privilege to be able to tackle a subject like this and to be able to present it on public television. And that is where we are allowed to have this much time to take such a deep dive into this topic, which really almost evaded us. It's so hard to get your arms around. So we started thinking about it in 2006. We had to do some fundraising. We had to write proposals. We had to figure out kind of what the lay of the land was. And we started really production in earnest in 2010. And it's the work of many, many people over a long period of time to identify the ordinary people, so-called, that we wanted to interview and sort of build our story around. And we decided early on from the very beginning that we would not make the mistake that so often Americans make when thinking about the Vietnam War, which is we think about ourselves. We knew it was extraordinarily important to include the perspectives of the Vietnamese on all sides of the war, the people who won the war, the people who lost the war, as well as Americans of every possible conviction and persuasion and experience. So we have interviews with people who were in the Marines, in the Army, in the Air Force. We have people who protested the war. We have families that were divided by the war. We have talked to people who went to Canada and people who regretted not going to Canada, and journalists and nurses and doctors and prisoners of war, and just an enormously wide range of perspectives. Our sense from the beginning was that this is such a painful chapter in our history, and it's so important to understanding who we are as a country that we needed to take the time to really understand it.
You just described why it is so difficult, or was so difficult, to get your arms around it, because there are so many different aspects of it. And for the very first time, maybe, we are hearing in film, or seeing on film, the North Vietnamese perspective, as you mentioned, some of the civilians in Vietnam, the Viet Cong, the North Vietnamese Army. But is this something that could have been done, say, 20 years ago? Or did it take 40 years for those wounds to heal that we finally can make a film about Vietnam?
Well, I think I would love to ask Sarah Botstein, our producer, also to speak about this. But, you know, we decided to make this film because we don't think the wounds actually have healed. They may have scarred over, and I don't want to beat this metaphor to death, but we have the sense this is kind of unfinished business, that it's a very traumatic event for our country, both for the soldiers and for the entire population, because we became so divided about the war and so confused and conflicted about what happened. And we've never really been able to have an informed conversation about it and come to any kind of shared understanding. And so we agree it has been the passage of time makes it possible for the veterans and the people who were against the war and everybody in between to take a deep breath and take a look back and try to make sense of this with us, and also to have the access that we had in Vietnam that would not have been possible 20, 25 years ago.
Sarah, I want to follow up on that. When Lynn says that the emotions are still raw, we here at WITF, we've had a series of previews with live audiences, and it's become quite obvious that those emotions are very raw for many people. I mean, there are people that you can tell 40 years have gone by and they've accepted you know, their roles in the Vietnam story. But we had a preview here last night where a veteran was very upset. So when Lynn says that it is unfinished business, from your point of view, talk about that.
Well, I think it's very painful and raw and complicated chapter in our history. So when people, you know, we've had the experience on the road, and I think you're speaking to what happened where last night at an event, when people look at footage from that time, hear music from that time, listen to other people's experiences, stories, perspectives from that time, they're brought sort of viscerally right back to how they felt then. And oftentimes those are very painful memories of a divided nation, a nation at war, a nation where politicians and its citizenry were in a state of turmoil and flux. And so, you know, I think some of the people we've interviewed have said to us that, you know, when you come of age and you're in that period of your life, it's a very heightened, very raw, very visceral time to think about. And so when you're put back in that time, I think emotions can run high, and it is a complicated time for us and for our country.
I think visceral is the perfect word for how some people have reacted to it. And what you described is that this era, and if you want to refer to it as a moment in someone's life, it defined their lives. For those who fought in Vietnam, those who protested against it, many of the people who lived through that era, this is the time of their lives that they remember the most. This is what defined them in many cases.
Yes, absolutely. And Go ahead,
Sarah. Sorry, we're not in the same place. Go ahead.
No, finish.
Oh, well, you know, I think this is a sort of challenge of living your life. The human condition is that these moments define you and that you can't be weighed down by them forever. I was recently in Vietnam showing the film to people there. We've had the whole film subtitled into Vietnamese, and we're going to be able to stream it on PBS, and the Vietnamese people can see it. And we were showing some scenes, and one of the people who came to a screening, his family had fled from the North Vietnamese takeover in 1975 when the South Vietnam basically disintegrated. And watching scenes from that really horrific experience, he said, you know, I'm not going to sleep tonight. I remember those days, and, you know, I've just tried to put them in a drawer and forget about it and live my life and just focus on the good things. But watching this film made me realize that you just can't do that. And, you know, that's sort of a central question here, that these very painful experiences have defined people's lives. They've also been really powerful, positive experiences for some people, depending on what happened to them. But the challenge of living is to negotiate, you know, what happened to you then and who you are now and how you go forward.
I'm curious, I wasn't aware that this had been shown in Vietnam, other than that one person you described. I mean, what was reaction to the film?
Right. Well, we haven't shown it, you know, we were doing some screenings like your screening.
Okay.
It's going to be when the film is streamed on PBS.org starting on Sunday, September 17th, it will also be available to be streamed in Vietnam. So that's when the whole country has a chance to see it.
Mm.
So we were basically doing the same thing that you just have been doing there. And the reactions have been really profound in that the people there feel they don't know much about the war really. They know the sort of official government narrative, which doesn't have a lot of humanity in it. It's a very abstracted, sort of almost mythological tale of victory without any true acknowledgement of the human cost. And the Vietnamese lost 3 million people, as many as 1 million soldiers on the winning side, 250,000 soldiers on the losing side, and untold millions of civilians. And they just don't sort of represent the war to themselves that way. And our film does go into all of that in great detail. So it was sort of revelatory for them to see images of North Vietnamese soldiers' bodies and the suffering that people on the losing side experience. So
That is one thing in the film that is mentioned. There is a North Vietnamese who said, we just don't talk about the war, and that's a big part of what happened here in America as well, is that we for a long, long time, we didn't talk about the war. The film is very intense. Lynn, you know, some of the emotions that I see actually as people are viewing the preview and talking about it afterwards, I mean, you can see tears, you can see people, their body language, that that whether they were there or not, that it's having an impact on it. But what do we learn? What haven't we heard over the years in film, in books, that we will learn in this series?
Wow. Well, Ken and Sarah and I like to say that we as filmmakers learned an enormous amount. We thought we knew a lot about the war, and every day was a revelation. We learn a great deal about the experiences of the Vietnamese, which Americans have never really had a chance to learn. We understand a great deal more about what was going on inside the White House and the Pentagon because we have made great use of the secret recordings that President Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon made of their private conversations and reflections about what was happening in real time as the war was progressing. And you hear Kennedy expressing doubt and regret. You hear Johnson expressing tremendous angst about what he feels he has no choice but to do, which is to prosecute the war and escalate it, even though he doesn't feel it will work and he doesn't feel it's in our nation's best interest in many ways. And you hear Nixon and Kissinger sort of strategizing about how to get America out of Vietnam without having it look like we surrendered or lost. And so you have intimate understanding of our leaders, and they come across, we think, as sort of human beings and flaws and frailties and egos, and you know, they're sort of brought down to earth in a certain way, and they basically populate the film along with the quote-unquote ordinary people.
And I have to tell you that that is one of the most fascinating aspects of the film that I found, was those tape recordings of the presidents talking on the telephone about the war. And, you know, Johnson in particular, especially up to Tet in 68, when General William Westmoreland, the commander in Vietnam, was just obsessed with body counts and how we were winning the war and we won't be there, you know, the end is in sight. And, you know, we won't be there much longer and all that. And Johnson bit it, you know, he believed everything Westmoreland was telling him, and it was far from the truth. And that's portrayed in the film as well.
He believed it, and that was at his peril, I suppose, or he wanted to believe it. You know, it's hard to say. I think it's there's a lot of groupthink here and wishful thinking, magical thinking even, and also just wanting to kick the can down the road. You know, hope that it's not going to happen on your watch. That's not a small factor here.
Let's take a phone call from Jim in Enola. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Hi. And hello to your guests. I wanted to talk very briefly about my experiences, and you were just talking about President Johnson, and I wanted to say a little bit about him as well. My situation was that I did not fight in Vietnam because I was extremely lucky. When student deferments were eliminated in, I believe, 1973, I was subject to the lottery, and I got it. I'll never forget my exact lottery number, which was 185, and if it had been lower than about 100, I would have gone to Vietnam. I was deeply conflicted about Vietnam. I would have gladly fought and died if necessary in World War II, but I just thought that the Vietnam War was senseless. Really did not want to go, and would have had a very tough decision to make, as so many American young men had to make. I was obviously so much luckier than the ones who went there and either died or were severely injured. About President Johnson, I think in many ways President Johnson will go down in history as, in some sense, our best president and in some sense one of our worst presidents. The anti-poverty programs, the civil rights programs were incredible, were wonderful, and then his incredible blind spot concerning Vietnam. You know, he, with the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, he essentially put us in war under false pretenses. And as you were just saying, he was accepting everything that General Westmoreland was saying, lock, stock, and barrel. And it just really eroded the faith that we Americans had in our government. And it's the legacy of that continues to this day. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to comment.
All right, Jim. Thank you very much. Lynn, Jim said a lot there, and you can comment on almost anything. But one thing that he said at the end, that I did want to ask the two of you about is that Vietnam was kind of the beginning when Americans started to question their government and not take everything as 100% truth. And you portray that in the movie, don't you?
Yeah, Sarah, why don't you jump in?
Yeah, I think several of the people that we interview in the film actually explicitly talk about that and how until this moment, until the Vietnam War really escalated and the American citizens began to understand that what they were being told and what was happening were not always the same. We had, I think for the most part, lived in a country where we didn't question our presidents in the same way that we do now, and that is definitely a legacy of the Vietnam War, something that people on all sides of the discussion around Vietnam tend to agree about. And as Lynn was saying earlier, I think the White House tapes and the Pentagon papers and sort of declassified information that's come to us over the last 40 years proves that, but that people felt that then, and that is still something that we as a country are grappling with today.
Mm-hmm. I would just add one more thought because it's so relevant to today, as Sarah's saying, is that, you know, what started in Vietnam, one could argue we had sort of a naive and maybe idealistic faith in our leaders that they were competent, honest, and well-intended, and that they would do what was best for the country and that they would tell us the truth. And over time, because of all the things Sarah said, that sort of all those things leached away, and it began as skepticism, and then there was something called the credibility gap. And then by the time you end up with Watergate and the Pentagon Papers and the aftermath of Vietnam, tremendous cynicism, that they can't be trusted, that they never tell the truth. And that cynicism, we feel, is sort of a corrosive, toxic brew that's eating away at our faith in ourselves in some ways, because our leaders reflect who we are, too. We elect them. And then if they are bad people who can't be trusted, what does that say about us? And so there's a sort of a cognitive dissonance between who we Americans want to be and then who we sometimes think our leaders are. And that is causing some of the really profound rancor and sort of disunion that we're facing today. Mm-hmm. And as we've been talking about a lot, as we've been going around the country sort of explaining the film, so much of what we see going on today can actually be traced back to the Vietnam era. And this is one of the central things. The others are, you know, a profound class divide, racial and ethnic tensions, questions about patriotism, who's a real American? Because as the caller was saying, you know, he felt the war was wrong. He didn't want to serve. He might have tried to avoid it. Luckily, he didn't have to make that choice, but many, many, many young men did. And they were faced with, you know, profound angst-ridden questions about what does it mean to be an American? What does it mean to love your country? And do you say my country right or wrong, love it or leave it? Or do you say my country is not doing the right thing and I don't think that I should be part of it? I should actually, you know, take some kind of stand against what our leaders, who we've just described, are not telling us the truth. You know, they don't deserve my blind allegiance. There's no easy answers here, but these are the questions that the Vietnam story raises, and that's why people are still so unsettled about it.
And I know I'm preaching to the choir, and probably the same thing with our audience, but this is why history and telling stories like this is so important. Let's take a phone call now from Mike in Harrisburg. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, I've seen a lot of movies about Vietnam. Personally, my draft number was 18, and I took the oath in the Navy the day after I graduated from high school. But what I've come to find out is the way we got into Vietnam, which is almost never addressed, started in World War II, when this country promised Ho Chi Minh that if he would support us against the Japanese, that we would support Vietnam and having the French leave Vietnam. And after World War II, we broke that promise, reneged on it, supported the French, and that led eventually to the very famous Battle of Dien Bien Phu. And we went down the road after the French were forced out to fill that void, and it was all corrupt, it was all illegal, it borders on war crimes, even and up to the falsification with the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And this is almost never addressed when talking about these periods or these leaders of ours who did this.
Well,
and we saw that replicated in Iraq.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for your call. And Lynn, that is discussed, that is addressed in this film, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And we, you know, thank you for that call. There are a lot of misunderstandings and sort of complexities that have not come down to us about what happened, how we got into Vietnam, into the war there. And our first episode details all the things the caller just described, not to the Gulf of Tonkin, but the early history of the French experience there, how we got involved. We see this as an epic tragedy with many, many chapters, and at many points along the way, there were, you know, opportunities to not get more deeply involved. And 1945, as World War II was ending, was one of such opportunity. But the Cold War happened, and our leaders felt that it was more important to see the Vietnam conflict as something to do with the Cold War and not an anti-colonial movement. And, of course, it was both. There were communists leading the anti-colonial movement there. And I don't want to get too into the weeds here, but suffice to say, you know, we say in our film in the introduction that the war was begun in good faith by decent people. And, you know, that is an important point to think about, that we can't solely judge the actions of our leaders in 1945 by what we know today. They didn't know everything that we know. On the other hand, however we begun it, we went very badly wrong relatively quickly and sort of lost our way morally and as a country, and we're still paying the price for that.
And would one of you describe the Gulf of Tonkin? Because that is very striking. I mean, Americans, over the years, we have learned that the Gulf of Tonkin, that we were misled, and President Johnson was even misled somewhat, the Gulf of Tonkin. But there was some miscommunication, that mistakes made that led to this horrendous war. And just, if you would, briefly, describe what actually happened in the Gulf of Tonkin.
Well, that's a tricky one because we have a major scene about that in our third episode. It's a very complex event. We feel we've told it in a way it's never been told, with the perspective of the North Vietnamese, as well as declassified documents, new scholarship, audio recordings of President Johnson and Secretary McNamara on the phone discussing what to do. But I think one thing that's important to think about is to take a little bit of a step back and realize that South Vietnam was on the precipice, that the insurgency, the communist revolution, was on the verge of taking over the country. They had really conquered most of the countryside, and the South Vietnamese government was very much on the ropes, and the military was not executing well. And there's a whole lot of reasons why. So it was a serious crisis building by the time the Gulf of Tonkin incident, so-called, happened in August of 64. And before it even happened, President Johnson had asked McGeorge Bundy, the National Security Advisor, to draft a resolution that he could send to Congress, giving him the war powers he needed to escalate the war. And they were basically waiting for the opportunity to get America more deeply involved, because they felt if they didn't do that, South Vietnam would no longer exist. Mm-hmm. So whether the Gulf of Tonkin had happened or not, and what happened is extremely complicated, and we will explain all that in the film, it's hard to imagine that we wouldn't have gotten involved more deeply regardless.
But
I would just add to that I think the discussion we've had from the caller and what Lynn is just saying and your question is, the first three episodes really deal with a lot of those themes and questions and ideas. And so we look forward to next Wednesday when the country will have seen those episodes.
Well,
exactly.
I want to thank the both of you. Lynn Novick is the co-director, and Sarah Botstein is the executive producer of the Vietnam War.
I'm actually not. I'm just a producer. Ken is our executive producer. I wouldn't want to get that wrong out in the world.
We produce the film
with Ken and Lynn, but the executive producer is Ken.
All right. Just love it when I get the wrong title here. But anyway.
No, it's okay.
We gave you promotion. Anyway, but I want to thank the two of you for being with us today, and very much look forward to seeing the premiere of the film this Sunday night at 8 on WITF-TV and PBS across the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
Willow Valley Communities recognizes the need for a national conversation about the Vietnam War and is proud to support the efforts to preserve the memories of those who lived through it. More information is available at willowvalleycommunities.org. The law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein, and Lair, who are proud to partner with WITF in preserving our history to enable future generations to explore the past, understand the present, and create the future. Saul Ewing is online at saul.com.